The following program was pre-recorded on WFAN. It's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Happy to be joined by Dan Trelauer. Danny is with Epic Risk Management. Danny, good morning and how are you, buddy?
Craig, good morning. I got an iPhone. I upgraded from an Android.
Oh, so finally you're not a green text message guy. Thank goodness. Yes. And joining us from Illinois this morning is our friend Liz. Liz, like myself and Dan, is a gambler in recovery. Liz, good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing your story with our audience. If I may ask, when was your last wager?
Well, interestingly, my memory is not great. I can tell you the exact date. It was actually March 17th because it was St. Patrick's Day, so easier to remember. But it was, I think, 2010. It could have been 2011.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Definitely one of them. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on either way, more than a decade of recovery. That's fantastic. Very proud of that.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit so we can get to know you and your backstory a little bit. Where did you grow up in the country, and what was your first kind of, you know, introduction to gambling?
Well, I grew up on the East Coast in central New York, and I got introduced to gambling real early. My mom remarried when I was pretty young, I want to say 7 or so, and married into a wonderful Italian-American family, just loving, and they fed us, and they're wonderful, and they also really enjoyed gambling, and so...
Yep.
You know, I would go to the bingo halls, do pull tabs. We played dollar poker all the time. And whoever had the best, like, poker hand on the serial numbers of their dollars would get all the dollars. And, you know, just playing dice in the garage. And I would go to the track with my parents and help them pick the horses. So that started really early on. And I was the one who would expend whatever money I was given and come back and, like, can I have more?
So right.
Kind of early on, I showed those signs of, like, not having the control.
So at what point did you start gambling on your own or with friends to the point where you can look back now in your life with some clarity and try to figure out at what age you were, where you can recognize that you might have had some issues?
Yeah, we started right when I was 21. We would start going to the casino with family or with friends, but I'd have to go up to Niagara Falls, Canada. So it was no small thing. So I didn't have something really nearby, but I would go on my own. The good thing is I was an athlete. So I was training 6 days a week. I was in college, honor roll student every semester. So I was very, very busy working. And so I didn't have a lot of time, but I would find myself going, without family and kind of like sneak over the border and slink back in shame, you know. And it wasn't until I moved. So, one, I had a career-ending injury, which was devastating.
And what type of athlete were you?
I was an amateur boxer.
Got it.
And I really did very well. I was the Pennsylvania state champion.
Awesome.
I went on to win the national championship.
So do you just have curiosity, one, there's some commonality amongst, you know, athletes at that level, college and above,
right,
where there's a drive and a competitive spirit that a lot of people just don't have or can't match.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you look back and say that you kind of treated your gambling with that same level of competitive spirit that you treated training to be a boxer.
100%. So, you know, if you looked at me, you would say, you were a boxer, you were a champion boxer. I had this intensity and this ferocity that could come out and when needed. And I kind of learned all I have to do is just, like, will it to happen. And just, like, I mean, I had an 80% knockout rate. I was ferocious.
Wow.
And so, you know, you take that to the poker table and it just doesn't equate. You can't be ferocious and intense and win. It doesn't translate, but you have this sense of yourself that of somebody that can overcome anything. And, you know, I have just had this personality of tell me I can't do it. I'm not only going to do it, I'm going to win it.
Right.
Know?
Which doesn't jive well with losing, in gambling because the ego kicks in and the competitive spirit kicks in.
Yeah.
Right, Danny, where it's now you're not going to beat me, so I'm going to go to the ATM and take out more money or get a loan and get more money because I'm going to show you that I'm going to beat you.
Right, yeah, I'm not a loser.
That's right. That ego kicks in, and it's that competitive drive. And, you know, having had the chance to get to know Liz, and I've known Liz for several years, and, just, you know, she underestimates, Craig, how high level she was boxing, you know, making it to the Olympic ranks. You know, that type of competitive spirit and that type of drive is only for the elite athletes.
Right.
And you, all of a sudden, it's like, I will translate this. Because you carry those personality traits into other areas of your life, including the gambling. So all of a sudden, everything we do is competitive, drive, that fear of failure that motivates us and gets us up in the morning. We think we can apply it there, but it just doesn't work in the world of gambling. Not at all.
So how old were you when you look back on it where gambling became omnipresent for you and became more important to you than whether it was a job, your studies, boxing, or you know, just about anything else?
Well, my injury ended my career in 1998, and then shortly after that, we moved to Illinois. And so kind of all of that happened at the same time, and it's really around 2000 that not only am I in a place where I have casinos much closer by, I'm not crossing a border, but I lost my career, and I also lost my stepfather, who was so important to me, and he died very young, age 46.
Right.
And then not only did I have this loss, all my family moved back east, further east. And so here I am, I'm practically alone, have zero accountability for my time or for my money. I'm grieving. I'm very close to casinos. And that's when I, you know, would find myself spending far too much time, far too much money, hiding, you know, staying until they closed, because back then they actually closed for a brief period of time. And so that's when that all came about.
You know, it's funny you say that. I remember going to the Atlantis in the Bahamas, where I had a lot of success playing blackjack. And, you know, there was that point in the night at, like, I think it was 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning where they closed the casino down for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. From 4 to 6, you can't gamble there because they vacuum, they clean.
Right.
You know, they do all their your chip counts, the cash counts, and all that stuff. And I remember making a big stink the last time I was there that, no, I'm a high roller gambler. You've got to keep that private room open.
Yeah.
And they did. Because that even just 2 hours at 4 o'clock in the morning when I should have been in bed sleeping, I would pace around, you know, until they opened up a private room for me because I couldn't fathom not gambling for those 2 hours.
Right.
I hated it. And then looking back on it, it's like, go to bed, dude, you know?
Yeah, that closure is important because it can be the only thing that interrupts an episode for some people.
So walk me through an example of a bad day gambling for you, the amount of hours you would spend. And I apologize for not asking, what was your game of choice?
I played poker. So I played like 3-card poker or Caribbean stud mostly.
So you played two of the games that you have the least chance of winning in the entire casino. That fascinates me.
And it's funny. You know what's funny is on one of your prior ones, I think it was the most recent one, they talked about having a mathematical brain and all that.
Yeah.
Do not at all. So,
yeah, like it's so funny though.
Player.
Like you think at some point you would have picked the game, just you know, basic odds would have given you a better chance of winning. Like 3-card poker is one of the worst games for the player in the entire casino.
Right. Oh, and you know what I would do is when I would be down too much, I would go to blackjack table and get it back up a couple $100 because I was better at that. But I didn't enjoy it. It didn't for some reason. It didn't.
Yep.
It was like that. Slow turning of the cards, and what am I going to have better than what the dealer has? Yeah.
As you progress in life, and gambling's still a big part of your life, and if it's too personal, please stop me for sure. Relationships, marriage, any of that stuff. Did you enjoy any of those types of things, or did you kind of stay, to yourself and not experience, you know, what we would call, quote unquote, normal, kind of like social experiences?
Well, I would say, you know, like they have functioning alcoholic. I would say it was a functioning compulsive gambler because my work was never affected, but I never was in that realm of having the the obligations at home until I ended up getting married and becoming a mother, because, you know, he came into the marriage with an infant.
Right.
And that was honestly what interrupted my gambling. That's when I actually realized what I had been doing. So that was in 2009.
Got
it. So right up until then, it was just, like, nobody really knew about it. People knew I enjoyed gambling. They thought I was good at it. Very few people ever saw, because I would go by myself, you know. And
right.
So
and that,
very
few
people knew that.
Dan, that's the big misconception. You know, we talk all the time that gambling is supposed to be a fun social activity with friends, you know, when done in a healthy manner. And the reality for all of us is that when we are gambling, we want anything but that. We want to be alone.
Yeah, it's the isolation piece, right? There's a number of, like, I remember when I would gamble with my friends when I was in action, and I just gambled differently when I was with them.
Right.
And I almost wouldn't gamble at all. Like, I would go with $20. You know, I'm trying to put on this facade that I'm a totally different person, but when everyone else would then want to go to the club or go get more drinks, I would stay behind. Then I could really start my gambling. That's how I viewed it. So it was just like Jekyll and Hyde kind of mentality, that you hide from the rest because you don't want anyone to know. You know, this is a private thing. I don't want anyone to know the secrets. I want to wear that mask. I want to hide that pain and that suffering. And then once they're not around, then I can really start to gamble. And Liz, you said something that I laugh at, because from time to time I would dabble in three card or some of these silly games, but I would always go back to blackjack because I had this sense about me that I could make money there. And then I'd up the bankroll and then go back and play these other games where I would just throw it all away. It's a crazy mentality when you think about it. It really is.
It really is. And like you said, you know, I would say not relationships, but work, because I'm an addictions counselor. So talk about Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
Here I am during the day helping people seek recovery from drugs and alcohol and then closing down the casino at night. And I didn't see it. I should know better. I don't drink. I don't use drugs. I lost a parent to alcoholism, so I'm so averse to addiction.
Huh.
I was doing it.
And you didn't see any of that in yourself. That fascinates me. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we'll continue on with Liz and, of course, Dan. It's Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. We have Dan Trelauer, of course, Epic Risk Management, and Liz from Illinois is nice enough to share her story. Liz, only because, you know, we've, you know, certain time constraints, if you don't mind sharing, what was your, you know, bottom of the barrel moment where you had that kind of, for lack of any better term, come to Jesus life experience that made you recognize, not only do I have a problem, but I'm willing to go get help for it?
Well, what had happened was, like I said, I had gotten married, and my husband thought I was just like a fun, good gambler because I had, you know, gone with him and won and paid for a trip and everything like that. But we used to go to the casino on my comps and go get, you know, the buffet and everything over and over and over. And after going there so many times, my husband turned and looked at me and he goes, how much do you gamble? And it hit me. Like, that's the thing. It's so strange. That's what hit me. And I was like, oh my gosh, what I had seen with alcoholism growing up and everything, all of this is what I was doing. And so that hit me, and I didn't stop immediately, but pretty quickly after that, because then I was like, okay, that's all right. I freaked out. I was like, it's okay. You can just do it responsibly. And guess what I learned? Not only can I not, but this was for me much stronger. Not that I can't gamble responsibly, because I know I can't, that I don't want to, because it was not fun.
Yeah, when those I are two different things. People need to understand that difference. There's a big difference between, you know, recognizing that you can't, which is a great accomplishment, because once you get to that point, at least in my experience, it makes it a lot easier not to.
Right. And then that further point for me, realizing, like, I don't even want to, because it's not fun for me. The way I want to do it is I want to be there in that seat, not even get up to go to the bathroom until there's a deck change, you know, go keep hitting the ATM. You know, that's the way that I was accustomed to playing. And to you know, I had that on March 17th was when I sat down and lost like $100 on three hands. And my husband's like, oh, gosh, all right, let's go. And it was physically, like, painful to get up and leave. And that was the moment that I said, not only can I not do this, I don't want to because it sucks. So.
You were like, get up and go. I'm just getting started, right? I'm going to lose a lot more of our money. Don't worry.
Right.
Yeah, it's funny what you said there about your husband asking you, you know, how much do you wager that we just got the free this, the free that? Boy, I had that same exact experience, you know, because my loved ones were so in the dark about my gambling. And I remember when I went to Bimini, which is the westernmost island of the Bahamas. It's about 45 minutes east of Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Miami. And I'm not, no exaggeration, they sent a reconfigured 737 jet. All right. So literally, I could have brought 150 people with me. Mm-hmm. And I remember a loved one who came with me on the trip said to me, how much do you gamble that they sent you a 737 jet? And I'm like, yeah, it's more about me being on the radio and TV. You know, they want me down there, that kind of thing. You know, I had an answer for it. And then, you know, looking back on it, you know, they don't send 737. You know, it's like a commercial airline that they had bought and, you know, refabbed, you know, to make it like a cool kind of party plane. And yeah, and then, oh, you have three houses on the beach. Well, they don't just give that to anybody. Right. And I'm saying that not to, you know, to glorify. I'm saying it because it's ugly and disgusting. But it fed my ego, you know, that, yeah, I'm able to get all this stuff. And, hey, dinner is for free. And, hey, you know, all that nonsensical stuff looking back on it, that at the end of the day didn't mean a damn thing. But in the time, it meant everything.
Right, and you know, when, like I said, I lost my career, I was about to turn pro, and you know, I had been on TV and in magazines. I was in Playboy, believe it or not, fully clothed in my boxing outfit. But you know, to go from that to nothing, and then I felt powerful. I felt like somebody. I felt important when I was, you know, in action. And so I think a lot of people have that experience where they don't feel like anybody except when they're playing, when they're in action. And that's a very misleading feeling.
So just out of curiosity, in the moment, did you miss boxing more or gambling more?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't miss gambling at all. I still get in the ring. I shouldn't. I'm almost 50.
Oh, do you? Well, so, you know, you should know this. You know, arguably the greatest women's boxer of all time, Amanda Serrano, is a liaison with me with FanDuel for responsible gambling, because she had a loved one who fell prey to gambling addiction, and she's now an added powerful voice for folks like us. So you should know that.
Wow, that's very cool. And so, yeah, I think I miss them both in different ways, and I'm so grateful that I don't miss gambling at all now.
And let me ask you to share with young men and women who might be listening to this show now that are, you know, just getting started, recognizing that they may have a problem and it's overwhelming and they're not sure what to do, who to call, how to get help. They know they've got a problem, but, you know, it's so daunting that they can't imagine living life without gambling, right, and they think their problems are too much and the walls are caving in financially, emotionally, all that stuff,
right,
you know, that it will be okay, it can be okay. Like, what do you say to young people that are just recognizing they have a problem? Today is their day one, and they can't fathom 10 years or even a month from today. What do you say to them?
I would say it's never too early to talk to somebody, because, you know, there are some people who probably have it in them to do it in a different way, but they don't know how. I mean, nobody knows, like, what is responsible gambling? Nobody talks about that. We don't even talk about what responsible drinking is, yet, you know, it's so present in our lives. So I think, you know, talking to somebody early, I would say talk about it before you even start gambling, but looking at it and know that whatever your choices are, to constantly revisit them, because if you even are gambling in a controlled way, things change in your life. You know, you have a loss, you have a medical condition, you know, it's not something that's for everybody at all points in their life. And I would also say it's never too late for those people who feel like it's too late. It never is. It's never too late. Please reach out. You know, 1-800-GAMBLERS, the nationwide helpline now, and just talk to somebody. And you're not foolish, you're not stupid, you're not weak, you're not irresponsible. There's just something that's, you know, maybe it's gambling's just not for you. You know, whatever you're wired or you're pre-existing conditions or anything. There's not something necessarily, you know, wrong with you. It's just all the factors that led up to it. Talk to somebody. Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Well, it's a real pleasure and privilege to talk to you. I'm glad you're doing so well. You're more than 10 years in recovery. I'm glad you're still getting a square circle and mix it up, too. I'm sure that must be cathartic and for you. And I really appreciate you sharing your story. And if I can ever return the favor, just ask. And I look forward to meeting you one day soon, too.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right, take care. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Yeah, one of the things I think people do need to understand is, you know, going to GA, going to a therapist, you know, is not a cure-all. Nobody can make you stop gambling. You have to decide you want to stop gambling. And all the amazing therapists and professionals that are out there that are willing to hold your hand and walk through the process to get you to a place where you can live and function without gambling, and without gambling be the focus of your entire life, they all exist, but it starts with you. And until you're ready to own it, acknowledge it, and live your life without gambling, there's not a therapist in the world that can make that happen. And you do need to know as well that there's also very little success in going cold turkey. There are setbacks, and setbacks don't mean you failed. Setbacks mean that you have a real problem, and it's okay. And day one can start again tomorrow or later today. And while it's frustrating for sure, and there's some shame involved in that, which I totally respect and understand, I've lived it, Dan's lived it. Don't get too down on yourself if you've gone a couple weeks and you're feeling good, and for whatever the reason is, you have a setback. That's part of life. It's part of, you know, maturing. It's part of conquering a demon, which is what gambling is for a lot of us. So just recognize that you can't take a pill and stop gambling. You have to decide in your heart, in your soul, in your mind that you don't want to gamble anymore and that you're willing to do whatever it takes to stay clear of gambling. And that may mean losing some friendships. It may mean not going out as often. And it may be, you know, things that you're not comfortable doing right now. But you have my word that if you dedicate yourself to it, you can get to 10 years, 4 years, 3 months, 30 years, a lifetime without gambling. But you got to decide that that's what you want to do and how you want to live your life. And I would I'd end it on that. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And thank you so much for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.